What I'd make China do is play by the international rules.
Over the past 4 years, the Sino-U.S. rivalry has been boon and bane for Southeast Asia.
It's no secret that Vietnam has benefited significantly from the China trade war.
The trajectory of their relations is not something that we would welcome, because in a hot war scenario, we are right in the middle of it.
美国才是本地区和平稳定的破坏者和麻烦制造者。
Don't let the Chinese Communist Party walk over us and our people.
We don't want to be forced to have to choose, because there is no winner.
Amid mounting pressure for countries in the region to pick a side, ASEAN states straddle a tightrope, caught in the throes of a clash between titans. Southeast Asia, a vast melting pot of cultures and influences. Eleven countries shaped by centuries of trade and episodes of Western imperialism. One country stands out among the pack, the Philippines. It's the only country to have been colonized by the United States. The American occupation left a deep and lasting legacy on the Philippines. It's especially pronounced in Angeles City. Also known as Little America, Angeles prospered from hosting American soldiers serving at the nearby Clark Air Base. The U.S. ran the facility from 1903 to 1991.
Mga 1970s up to late 80s, wala kang makikita salga dito, sa especially in Balibago. Mostly occupied by the Americans, lalo na pagdating na ng pagdumilim na, yung madilim na, andyan na sila sa mga clubs, mga bars. Yun po ang mga situation dito noon.
Angeles's heyday ended abruptly in 1991. A volcanic eruption, coupled with strong anti-colonial pressure, forced the American Air Force to abandon Clark and take flight permanently. It's been 30 years since they left. But Romeo Rinales, who works for the city's oldest restaurant, still waxes lyrical about the U.S. soldiers who used to dominate this former boom town.
Itong picture namin, ito ni Jeff, it was taken way back 1983.
Nagkikwento sila about their flights, kung saan sila napupunta. Saka, yun nga, they're very appreciative, they're very generous sila sa mga Pilipino. When ever they give us a run for them, malaki silang magbigay tip, although I do not really, hindi ko inaasahan yun, hindi ko inaasahan na bigyan ako ng tip. Because of our friendship.
Some call it a colonial hangover. Others see it as an eternal love affair. Whatever one's opinion, the American heritage continues to influence how Filipinos view international affairs, especially Sino-U.S. competition.
Between the Chinese and the Americans, I would have the Filipinos choose the Americans, because the Americans have always been there for the Philippines.
Janet Alford is one of thousands in Angeles born from mixed marriages between American soldiers and local Filipinos. She now works for an association which supports American war veterans residing in the Philippines.
I tend to always go back to history, because time and time again, when the Philippines is in need, our American brothers and sisters, they're there to help us. Douglas MacArthur said, "I shall return," and sure he did. He did return and liberated the Filipinos from the Japanese. Especially when Clark was here, there's a lot of community activities going on as far as volunteering, giving back, and all that, and until now.
Just as Filipinos' ties with the U.S. are steeped in history, relations with China go a long way back, too. Neighboring Manila is home to the world's oldest Chinatown. Established in the late 1500s, it's a symbol of over five centuries of trade and commerce with China. And today, China ranks third amongst countries contributing the most to the Philippines' trade and investment. One of the places the Chinese are parking their money is the old Clark Air Base. Since 2016, this site has been redeveloped by the Philippine government with the help of investors from around Asia as new Clark City. When completed, it will house a mix of residential, commercial, and industrial facilities. It's also slated to become the new political capital of the country.
As already been announced by the president, all national government agencies to put up their backup offices in the new Clark City so that in case of emergency, in case of calamity, they can still operate.
Ronaldo Katukutan is the mayor of Capas City, which houses most of new Clark.
As already been projected, after its development, there will be at least 1.2 million job opportunities within the new Clark City alone. A lot of Filipinos now are working as caregivers, house workers in the different countries. So giving them the opportunity with the new Clark City, many hotels, many industrial area, instead of flying to different countries, and also some professionals need not to go to Manila. As of now, we had a lot of Chinese investors also here, migrated here, and then eventually they become a natural Filipino citizen. They are really good.
But these plans have raised eyebrows across the country. Filipinos have long protested against China's activities in the South China Sea, where both countries are embroiled in a territorial dispute. In 2016, many in the country celebrated a landmark decision by an international tribunal which dismissed Beijing's sprawling claims in the South China Sea.
It's nice to become friendly to a neighbor country, but I want to give emphasis that we should not abandon our right as we already won the case. So we should, by all means, invoke our sovereign right to this particular area. Now, the government of the United States of America used to respect that. They assure us even that if someday China will not honor the international decision, which is we won in the West Philippine Sea, or they will help us and they will protect the Philippines.
Given Clark's strategic location just off the South China Sea, news of Chinese cash flowing into the old American airbase has attracted some controversy. Romel Ong is a retired Rear Admiral from the Philippine Navy. He now teaches at the prestigious Ateneo School of Government. He weighs in on whether Chinese investment in New Clark City will impact his nation's security.
In a way, it's no longer viable as a military facility. Now, whether it would be a slap on the face of the United States, I think the best way for them is also to invest in that area. Because economic development, if you treat it in a logical way, is neutral in terms of nationality. It's whoever brings in the money to be able to develop that area would be the one you would be able to cater to.
We are hoping na whether you are a Chinese or any other foreign nationals na mag-invest dito sa Angeles City, especially in Clark Economic Zone, we're hoping na magkakaroon kaming assurance na babalik sa amin yung dati naming glory, sabi nga.
Like most people here, Janet is torn between development and conservation.
When you go into Clark now, the remnants of what was Clark is slowly eroding. It's totally different because it is going to be very commercialized. We need the money, right? Okay, we're opening our doors for investment. But then at the same time, we need to do good by the Filipinos.
She's worried that the government will become overly reliant on Chinese investment to build new infrastructure. A 500-hectare business park to be developed by the Chinese on the old Clark Airfield stands out in particular.
If we rely solely on China, they're just going to come in like a big bully. It's going to be challenging because we have already opened the doors for a lot of their investments, and then they kind of took over already.
If they want to invest, they are welcome. This is a two countries agreement. If the city of Capas will benefit out of this 500 hectares development, as long as it will create a job opportunities and they will respect our Philippine, I would say, culture and even our traditions.
Since coming into office in 2016, President Duterte has made infrastructure development a priority. To help realize his grand vision, known as the Build, Build, Build scheme, he has secured billions of dollars in pledged infrastructure funding from China.
We're talking about road bridges, flood control projects, school buildings. We partner with China in the same way that we partner with Japanese and Korea. We evaluate projects by their proposal. If there are best practices that are available elsewhere, then I think the Philippines should grab every opportunity to improve its current infrastructure.
In reality, most of the pledged money from China has yet to materialize. But observers believe this will have little effect on President Duterte's pivot to Beijing, which has come amid intense competition between the U.S. and China for influence over Southeast Asia. Both superpowers regard the region as a key plank in the international trading system.
Beijing doesn't respect the fundamental democratic values or those enshrined in the ASEAN Charter. Don't just speak up, but act. Don't let the Chinese Communist Party walk over us and our people.
Everybody in Southeast Asia is in a tug-of-war situation right now. They're all trying to balance their relations with China and with the United States. And that behavior is, I would say, explainable in the sense that China is proximate to us. They are our next-door neighbors, and everything that China does affects us.
Admiral Ong says a recent decision made by President Duterte reveals stirrings in the diplomatic melange. In February 2020, he canceled the visiting forces agreement between the Philippines and the United States. Also known as the VFA, the agreement is over 20 years old. It facilitates shoulder-to-shoulder military exercises between the two countries. It also allows the United States to deploy troops and vessels into the Philippines in response to threats in the region.
Without VFA, you have basically removed that balance that you want to aspire for in terms of relations with the United States and China, balancing security relations with the United States and balancing trade relations with China. When you offset that balance by removing one counterweight, then you are shifting basically everything to one side, which is to relations with China.
In July 2020, President Duterte reversed course on the decision to cancel the VFA. However, he continues to use the agreement as a bargaining chip in exchange for favors from the U.S. His latest demand, COVID-19 vaccines. This has raised questions on whether the political game that the government is playing would put the region's security at risk.
Only the United States currently has the means to be able to secure the Asia-Pacific, at least Asia-Pacific waters, from any contentious issues on the maritime front. There is no other country within Southeast Asia that has that capability and the will to enforce international law. We're not only talking about the physical force or physical capability, but also the strategic intent and the strategic will to be able to deliver a peaceful environment in the region.
Nestled in the heart of Ho Chi Minh City's downtown is this iconic restaurant. Pho 2000 is a household name across the country, not just for the signature noodle broth, but because of a visit from a famous American in the year 2000.
For an acting U.S. president to visit Vietnam, that really a historical event that mark, you know, the beginning of a new future and a new diplomatic relationship between the two countries is also open up a new future of cooperation between the two countries and its peoples. And I felt lucky that Pho 2000 restaurant has been chosen to be part of that history. And we were very proud of that.
U.S. President Bill Clinton's visit officially signified the normalizing of relations between U.S. and Vietnam 25 years after the Vietnam War. Businessman Alain Tan also remembers it as the moment the world found out that communist Vietnam was open for business.
The fact that, you know, we are now doing business with practically every country in the world. Now that, I believe, is the very best thing that happened to Vietnam as a country and as far as and the Vietnamese people and to also the Vietnamese, the business community. We all benefit from that. Whenever there is a trade war, trade tension, trade embargo, economic roadblock between countries to countries, I think it's a sad story as far as business is concerned, because business now is global. For a small businessman like me, in a very humble food and beverage business, to take side, to choose. We don't want to be forced to have to choose, because there is no winner.
Today, Vietnam's economy is heavily reliant on America. The country makes $60 billion a year selling goods to the U.S., its biggest export market. And this steady flow of American money has trickled down to the everyday man. Truong Chi Quang is one of millions of Vietnamese factory workers who work for firms that manufacture products for the U.S. Over the years, he worked his way up to become the department head of an American furniture factory.
Gia nhập Stanley thì nó điều đầu tiên là Stanley tạo điều kiện là cho mình có một cái thu nhập vừa phù hợp với mình và mình cảm thấy nó rất là tốt, đặc biệt là sau cái mùa dịch này thu nhập vẫn ổn định, lo được cho một vợ và hai con. Mỹ thì cái phong cách là kiểu Mỹ mà, tức là free time, cái quan niệm của họ là làm hết việc chứ không làm hết giờ. Và bên cạnh đó thì chúng ta cũng học được nhiều cái hay, cái tiên tiến của nước Mỹ mang.
Even in the midst of a pandemic, Vietnam remained one of the world's fastest growing economies in 2020. It's not just America that Vietnam has to thank for that impressive statistic. In recent years, the rise of China has created new opportunities for the Southeast Asian nation. China is now Vietnam's top trading partner with two-way bilateral trade valued at over $100 billion. China ranks third in the list of largest investors in Vietnam. The United States is notably absent from the top three. Despite this, many Vietnamese still favor strong relations with the United States over China. Part of this distrust of Beijing flows from recent tensions in the South China Sea and public outrage over how Vietnamese fishermen have been treated by Chinese ships in the disputed waters.
Ở phía hướng Đông Tây, nó ra, rồi là nó giấy em. Nó gặp em là em phát hiện nó là một giờ là nó ra giấy em. Giấy em đấy, giấy em hơi tiếng mồ, đến 10 giờ là rồi giấy em là nó tố đó, nó ném đó. Thường là nó thỏa đâu, là nó không thỏa, nó hoài là nó xong mà chủ có binh á. Một trái của mình đó, mà chỗ cánh cửa lớn đó. Cỡ nửa tiếng sau, nó thấy tàu em chìm, có tàu Trung Quốc nó thọ tàu bon, thọ con đô á. Đúng giấc, tối đêm lên tàu nó. Có nó bác em vô, nó có thằng thâm dịch viên. Nó bác em vô là, nó hỏi em là vùng biển này, vùng biển của Trung Quốc, mấy anh không được lo lòm. Nói chung thì em cũng ra đánh bét rồi, em cũng mưu sinh đánh bét rồi, em mưu sinh nuôi vợ nuôi con mà ra đó Trung Quốc làm vậy thì nói chung thì em cũng buồn. Giờ mất tài sản, mất hết tài sản, mất tán thì em cũng buồn.
China, one of sending the message is very clear. China is strong and powerful. We're going to defend, safeguard China's national interests and China's territorial integrity, including the South China Sea, no matter what it will cost. China regarded the South China Sea issue as a core national interest, alongside with so-called Tibet and the Taiwan issue, right? So, use the President Xi's word, right? China will not give up an inch of territory left behind by the ancestor.
The case of the Vietnamese fishermen was picked up by the United States. In July 2020, the Trump administration broke from the U.S.'s long-standing neutrality in the territorial disputes. It threw its support behind the Southeast Asian claimant states and branded Beijing's claims in the South China Sea as unlawful. The U.S. also redeployed troops and aircraft carriers to Southeast Asia and stepped up military drills in the region. China responded with drills of its own.
I know the task before us won't be easy.
Newly elected U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to continue championing freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. But details of the depths he will go to defend it are still murky. In the meantime, Beijing stands ready for any confrontation.
Right now, the trajectory of the relations between U.S. and China is not something that we would welcome because it's headed towards conflict. We are right in the middle of it. So I think the best option is how to prevent a hot war. And that means being able to put in place a mechanism that would allow the two major powers to talk instead of fight. I think the best way
But the harder way is if ASEAN, as a multilateral organization, would step up and be a more proactive player in terms of defining how the regional security environment will take shape.
Currently, all 10 ASEAN member states are negotiating a code of conduct for navigating the disputed waters. China has pledged to work closely with ASEAN to realize this. It hopes to have the code ready by 2021.
There's a lack of so-called trust between the ASEAN countries and China. So that's in China's interest to speed up the negotiation, the COC. So to lower the temperature, to lower the tension, China wants to focus on the United States. They want to have stable and friendly relation with the neighbor, the ASEAN. That's very important for China.
Bởi vì nó có hai cái. Một, anh có ràng buộc pháp lý không? Hai là nó có hiện thực không? Phải thực chất cả. Chứ còn chơi chơi để làm hình thức ấy, để mà thực hiện cho một cái ý đồ gì đó thâm ý ở bên trong thì rất khó. Muốn như thế phải enforcement. Mà enforcement thì tôi cũng có những cái cuộc trao đổi trực tiếp ở ngay tại Bắc Kinh về họp về cái việc trong đó có COC, trao đổi với các cái học giả, đứng nhìn của các thinh tăng học giả đó, cả Trung Quốc rồi 4-5 nước ASEAN trong đó có Việt Nam. Thì chúng tôi đi thì cũng với tư cách là informal meeting thôi, tức là không đại diện cho quốc gia nào, mà là những nhà khoa học. Thì chúng trong cái quá trình tranh luận thì cũng có người nói rằng là bởi vì nó enforce rất khó, là bởi vì khi một cái luật ra đời, một cái văn bản pháp lý mang tính chất pháp quy mà ràng buộc pháp lý đấy ra đời, chính học giả Trung Quốc nói đấy, cứ giả sử cho nó là ràng buộc được pháp lý đi, thì ai enforce, ai thực thi.
ASEAN is pushing ahead with the code of conduct, aiming towards a stronger, more united approach to regional security. However, on the economic front, recent developments in the trade war have heated up competition among members of the regional bloc.
Taking in billions of dollars of tariffs. In the old days, we made our product and we took our product and that's what it was. Now we go to China, we buy it. Not anymore. And if they don't want to pay tariffs, make it here or buy it from another country that's a non-tariffed country.
The US-China trade war has disrupted global supply chains. But ASEAN countries have found new opportunities amidst the chaos. As factories moved out of China to escape U.S. tariffs, many set up in ASEAN. One destination in particular seemed especially inviting.
Vietnam is an entrepreneur's paradise. It's an easy place to take a risk without a lot of capital. Vietnam was already an attractive destination to decouple and to spread the supply chain risk for many buyers who were interested in helping support the consistency, safety, and reliability of their existing supply chain. The trade war only seemed to accelerate this.
American businessman Walter Blocker has been running multiple companies in Vietnam for over 20 years. In 2018, he bought over Stanley Furniture. Founded in 1924 in North Carolina, its products were made in the USA until the 2000s. Then production moved to China. Now, everything's made in Vietnam. Stanley's big move to Vietnam reflects a growing reluctance among American investors to shift manufacturing back to the United States, which was one of the main intents of President Trump's trade war.
I think that companies have looked carefully at the cost of having more work done in the U.S. At the end of the day, companies are going to choose the most efficient, both in terms of cost and time, way to conduct their business. Vietnam has worked to create a safe platform for investment. One of the key priorities of the government here has been to respect the needs of its people and bring broad benefits to a very large middle class that's emerging now out of poverty into one of the most prosperous economies in the region. That works very well with the private sector. Because the government has worked with the private sector to listen and understand the needs of the investors and the needs of the job creators so that we can have a as harmonious as possible relationship.
But there's another relationship that's equally important to Walker.
Well, it's no secret that Vietnam has benefited significantly from the China trade war, but it also brings challenges. And the biggest challenge today is to understand the balance of trade and the trade deficit. What is important is to have strong lines of communication, shared interest, and strategic goals between not just China and the U.S., but the region in general, to ensure the independence and prosperity of all people in all economies, whether they're big or small, everyone should have a chance to lead their lives and lead prosperity in safe environments.
Over in neighboring Thailand, Delta Electronics, headquartered in Taiwan, makes components for the likes of Huawei and Microsoft. It's shifted some of its production from China to what is now Southeast Asia's other manufacturer's paradise. Delta Thailand has been operating here since the 1980s. It has 6 factories. A 7th is well on the way.
Overall, yes, it will cost you the money to acquire the land or rent the land, or you would need to do a lot of machinery setup and training of the people. But I think it's quite nature. It's just part of the business. We actually get a lot of support from the governments. Thailand basically is a country very much welcome the foreigners, and it's developing quite well as one of the center in the region. The labor force in Thailand is very stable, and people, they, as long as you give them the good training, and they will follow the guidance and do a good job. And from our point of view, sometimes a stable labor force, it does make a difference, because it's the product. You want to make sure people know how to deal with it, how to handle it, how to manufacture it.
Gantima Pinpanom is a supervisor at one of Delta Thailand's 6 factories. Due to a recent spike in orders from the U.S., she and her workers have been working harder to ramp up their company's output. But she's not complaining.
การที่มีการสั่งซื้อสินค้าเพิ่มมากขึ้นทำให้ชีวิตทำให้ดิฉันมีความมั่นคงในการทำงานแล้วก็ใช้ชีวิตประจำวันได้อย่างมีความสุขเพราะที่นี่ให้สวัสดิการที่ดีไม่ว่าจะเป็นเรื่องค่าอาหารมีรถรับส่งให้แล้วก็มีสวัสดิการเรื่องค่ารักษาพยาบาลที่เกี่ยวกับตัวของดิฉันแล้วก็คนในครอบครัวด้วยค่ะจากการที่มีนักลงทุนหรือว่าต่างชาติเข้ามาลงทุนในเมืองไทยก็ทำให้เรามีความสะดวกสบายขึ้นอย่างเช่นมีร้านค้ามีห้างสรรพสินค้ารวมทั้งมีสถานพยาบาลที่แบบใกล้บ้านไม่ต้องแบบว่าลำบากในการที่จะเดินทางไปอย่างเช่นไปหาซื้อของหรือว่าไปหาหมออะไรอย่างนี้ค่ะคือมีความสะดวกสบายขึ้นค่ะ
These sentiments are shared across ASEAN. For the past 2 years, countries in the region have been jostling to catch a share of the investment flowing out of China. Duongjai Asachintachit has been leading the charge for Thailand.
We would like to accelerate investment in Thailand. If companies can put in at least 1 billion baht of investment, real investment, in Thailand, after 12 months, then they would get 5 years of 50% reduction of corporate income tax. So we are now briefly looking for investments that would be using higher technology content and that would be creating more value added. And we see that a lot of investments that are being relocated are exactly fitting our objectives.
If Vietnam and Thailand are the early victors of the trade war, Indonesia is arguably the biggest loser in the race to attract manufacturers seeking to bypass tariffs. Economist Yose Rizal is not surprised. He recalls Indonesia being one of the last to get on board China's infrastructure express train, the Belt and Road Initiative.
There are several issues that make Indonesia with joining the Belt and Road Initiative a little late. In 2017, we conducted a survey on public perceptions on the economic issues. They put China as the top countries that bring disadvantage to Indonesian economy. But interestingly, they also put the U.S. as the second. So Indonesian public has this kind of strange perceptions toward the China and toward U.S.
Today, Indonesia is making up for its late start. It's actively courting foreign investments, most notably from China. One recent deal with Beijing could be a lifesaver. Iwan Setiawan works for Biopharma. The state-run pharmaceutical firm is working with the Chinese to distribute the China-made Sinovac vaccine in Indonesia. They've received nearly 3 million doses so far, along with raw materials and the recipe for Indonesia to reproduce the vaccine themselves.
Ini adalah kebutuhan dasar masyarakat ya, yang harus dipenuhi oleh negara, sehingga kita Bio Farma juga tidak berjalan sendiri, kita mendapat dukungan dari pemerintah, sehingga kita lebih mudah untuk melakukan kolaborasi ini, dan kita alhamdulillah berhasil ya, kita.
Indonesia was given priority access by China to its vaccine. Due in part because amongst countries in the region, Indonesia is most embattled by the pandemic. The country was also chosen to be the distribution hub for Sinovac in Southeast Asia. A useful step towards the government's plans for a national inoculation program in 2021.
Ini adalah harapan kita untuk mengakhiri daripada pandemi ini yang sudah memporak-porandakan tatanan kehidupan kita, sehingga kita memang tidak bisa dipisahkan kita antara bagaimana sekarang kita memulihkan kesehatan, kemudian juga memulihkan perekonomian kita.
Indonesia hopes to keep such meaningful collaborations going with China. But like many other countries in the region, it needs to balance this with its relations with the U.S. The regional grouping ASEAN could provide a possible solution. For the past 7 years, China has been trying to cement its superpower status through the Belt and Road Initiative. Launched in 2013, it's Beijing's grand invitation for countries to prosper together through cooperation. And these collaborations have not been confined to just infrastructure. China has invested heavily in the people of Southeast Asia too. To win hearts and minds, China has granted thousands of full scholarships to students in the region. Students from ASEAN states now make up the biggest foreign student body in China at around 80,000.
Wei ni hao, nin kan le wo di lunwen le ma?
Ah, wo kan le, xie de hen hao.
Indonesian academic Humphrey Russell is one of thousands who enrolled in the China ASEAN University Network program. He recently completed a 6-year study trip in China, sponsored by the Chinese government. He returned with a PhD and a new perspective.
China itu adalah negara yang tidak seperti yang saya bayangkan gitu, yang masih terbelakang. Tapi ketika saya sampai di sana, saya agak amazed karena
infrastruktur pembangunan Cina maju dengan pesat. Saya juga berpikir bahwa dengan adanya Belt and Road dalam konteks people to people itu, kita juga kan memberikan ruang kepada warga Cina yang ingin datang ke Indonesia untuk belajar.
Humphrey now specializes in foreign affairs. He feels the current relations between China and Indonesia are the closest they've been in 30 years. Marked by the fact that both countries' leaders met at least 7 times over the past 6 years and had meaningful exchanges each time.
Tak dapat dipungkiri bahwa Indonesia terkesan sangat dekat dengan China. Tapi kan tidak juga disimpulkan bahwa Indonesia mengambil posisi berlawanan dengan Amerika Serikat. Amerika di bawah Trump itu kebijakannya sangat unilateral dan dia proteksionis dan menggaungkan American First.
The United States is not going to take care of everything.
Di sisi lain, China datang menawarkan kerjasama yang lebih menguntungkan buat Indonesia. Mereka menawarkan kerjasama yang baik, sehingga dalam konteks itu dan melihat kepentingan nasional.
These collaborations are helping Indonesian President Joko Widodo deliver on his election promises of new and improved infrastructure in the country. One key project that both Indonesia and China are currently working together on is a 150-kilometer railway. It will connect the capital, Jakarta, with Bandung, an emerging business hub.
Pembangunan infrastruktur yang baik, disparitas kesenjangan ekonomi antara Jawa dan luar Jawa itu bisa diminimalisir. Jokowi menganggap bahwa ini adalah kesempatan yang baik untuk bekerja sama dengan Cina, terutama menarik investasi Cina, membangun infrastruktur yang pembiayaannya akan sulit dipenuhi oleh APBN kita. Jokowi juga yakin bahwa sebagai negara yang sejajar, kerjasama dengan Cina tentu akan memberikan keuntungan yang baik bagi kedua negara.
Elsewhere in the world, inertia has set in on other Belt and Road projects. Many are in disarray, plagued by allegations of debt traps and destructive impacts on local livelihoods. Over the past 2 years, the Trump administration has played up these allegations as part of a plot to get countries to decouple from China.
No matter what US said, right, I think ASEAN stick to a certain principle. The BRI provide easier market access for the ASEAN goods to enter the Chinese market and also help to speed up the infrastructure improvement in this region and also help local industry take off. But there's a lack of transparency and also respect for the international recognized standard, right? We know that several countries in this region actually bear enormous debt pressure. But I think that we should not underestimate, right, China's ability to learning about this criticism. So China know this, right? So I think it will take time. It will take time to China to make this kind of the so-called readjustment.
Despite the best efforts from both superpowers to lure countries in the region to their respective sides, the 10 ASEAN states have collectively committed to remain neutral.
History teaches us if we take side to one of a major country in the world, it's not benefiting for the people. ASEAN, with the population more than 600 million, is a big market. We are strong in the middle class. U.S. also focus on middle class. The U.S. government, ASEAN, can provide a platform to both middle class to engage. But now ASEAN is number one trading partner in China. We not take a side because both is important for us in terms of economic trade and investment.
Career diplomat Ade Sarwono represents Indonesia in ASEAN. While he is against member countries picking sides, he believes ASEAN can do more than sit on the fence in the face of conflict.
What we can do is to bring both powers in the one table with us and listen to us. Use the ASEAN-led mechanism. We have already Asia Summit, we have ASEAN Plus 3, we have ASEAN Regional Forum. We would like to see all work together, cooperate together, rather than rivalry or conflicting, and use their energy to implement cooperation, like, for example, one of connectivity, infrastructure, digitalization, on trade policy. So work with us. Our interest, again and again, is always want to make our region stable and peaceful, and so we can develop, we can prosper.
We can set the rules of the road instead of having China and others dictate outcomes because they are the only game in town.
Newly minted U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to be tough on China. Yet his presidency marks a clean sheet for diplomacy between Beijing and Washington. After more than a year grappling with fears of a hot war in their backyard, the people of Southeast Asia are hoping for calm after the storm.
With this new administration that's going to come in, I think he's a little bit more level-headed, that him and his administration will be able to kind of diffuse the arguments and the issues or disagreements between the two sides, so to speak.
Thank you.
Geopolitics will change. Leaders will change, but business never change. We need peace and stability so that our business can grow.
There are still many issues that China and the U.S. need to work out between them. And some of these issues may never be resolved. But now's the time for both sides to seek common ground and find ways to foster healthy competition. Southeast Asia looks forward to being part of this conversation and working together with both superpowers. In doing so, they hope to disentangle themselves from the dangerous tightrope they've been walking.